All right, good morning, everybody. This is November 6th. This is a work session on the long-term financial planning, one of my favorite subjects. We're in session.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. I'm Jennifer Cooperman, Chief Financial Officer and Director of the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services, and we are here today to talk about long-term financial planning. So I'd like to start today with a visualization of certain future general fund spending obligations the city has today. This chart, which you have in front of you as well as on the screen, and unfortunately the chart on the screen, the big gap in the middle is gray, which makes it look like it's not there, but it really is there. This chart extends out 15 years, so it's beyond the five-year forecast that Josh Harwood, the city economist, produces, and is built from the bottom up, starting with the most committed expenses we have up to the more discretionary expenses. So we start at the bottom. There's a very thin blue line at the bottom for debt service. That's our known debt service out in this next 15-year time frame. The dark orange is our pension obligation bonds. Those expire, mature at the end of 11 years. Yes.
Just say that faint blue line at the very bottom is debt service?
That's general fund debt service.
Because that's interesting, because that is, I think the public would be surprised to see that it is so modest.
Yes, and if we take out water, we take out BES, and we have left a much smaller pool of debt service.
And you've mentioned the utilities, both of which have among the highest credit ratings in the country.
Yes.
And are closed systems where they're able to get very, very favorable rates.
Yes.
Well, the reason I mention this is that the other day I was just looking at these national rankings,
mm-hmm.
and Oregon does very well on debt service.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so we're in the middle of the pack in some areas, but in debt service statewide, we do very well. And my guess is that among peer cities, we would do very well with such a mm-hmm. modest amount of debt service.
We are, to use your word, we're modest in our issuance of debt. We have a significant amount of capacity left. We make sure that it is repaid in a relatively short time frame. We save our capacity. It's very highly rated. This was intended to show some magnitudes of issues that we have.
The number becomes bigger if you include debt service within urban renewal.
It does.
But that's not general fund.
Right.
Okay, I think I've had my coffee this morning, and I'm able to follow along what you're saying, so thank you.
Good. Those are actually excellent. Excellent questions. Can you please define again IMS and EMS?
Yes. Do you mind if I continue working up from the bottom?
Oh, you're...
Yes. No problem. Thank you.
Say no more.
Thank you. It's sort of like doing the alphabet song, and you got to go back to the beginning if you get stopped in the middle. So the most committed expenses we have at the bottom, working our way up. Debt service, pension obligation bonds are the dark orange. PERS, which is yellow. Our legal settlements, there's actually a very thin blue line right above PERS. Personal services, which is the big gray area, wages, salaries, related payroll taxes, benefits, et cetera. Capital outlay, right above that, is the dark blue. External materials and services, these are professional services, utilities that we pay for, rent where we rent out our space. These are payments to outside entities. And then that's the green, and the brown area on the top is internal materials and services. So our internal service funds, fleet, facilities, BTS, et cetera. Yes.
What all is involved in capital outlay?
Capital outlay in this. Let me tell you how I built this. So we have our current year, and I had a staff person in OMF BizOps. Thank you very much to Aaron Rivera, who worked very hard with me on this. He did some analysis of year one and took our current budget. general fund. And then we used the escalation factors from Josh Harwood, City Economist, to go out for 5 years. And then I continued those escalation factors out 15 years. Capital outlay are projects that we currently have in the plans for, say, BTS capital projects. But to go back to last week, the integrated tax software system is not included in this yet because it's not in our forecast.
In IMS and EMS again?
Materials and services.
Okay, there we go.
So would it be correct to read this graph as saying over the bottom is obviously years.
Yes.
So over the next 15 years, our certain future spending obligations will grow by nearly $300 million.
If we presume no recession and along the escalation path of the escalation factors that we're currently using. My intent
and
with
so,
this graph.
So just to make sure I understand that, you're assuming interest rates remain
as is, as they are.
Flat or at a flat growth rate?
A slight growth rate.
Slight growth rate, and you were assuming no recession.
Correct.
So what are you assuming in terms of economic growth?
In the 2%-ish.
Okay. And in a 15-year time period, I assume you would agree that that's an unrealistic expectation.
There's a greater likelihood of a recession that's not
and
yet
there,
reflected.
And therefore, this is a conservative estimate of what our certain future obligations are.
Yes. So the point of this, there, I had a few things that I found intriguing in putting this chart together. Yes.
I just want to make sure I'm reading one other thing. In addition to, I think, people being surprised to see debt service be such a modest part of the stacking, I think people are going to be surprised that PERS levels off in the out years. And could you explain that? I think I know the answer, but would you give us an explanation for that as well?
You mean level off as opposed to?
Well, in years 1 through 6, it goes up pretty precipitously.
Right.
But then it sort of levels out, and I'm assuming this has to do with retirements, people leaving the system,
mm-hmm.
Then fewer tier one people, and the like. But what's the macro explanation as to why?
The macro is that today, when we make payments to PERS, we're think of it in two really big buckets. We're paying what's called normal cost for the employees that we have today, the normal amount that we should be putting away towards their retirement. We also have the unfunded liability for people who have already earned those benefits that we have been underpaying, and that's why we have this unfunded liability. At some point, that unfunded liability will be paid off. It'll take a number of years to do that. Our PERS rates are going to increase for a number of years, but at some point they will level off and we will realize the benefit of having a new workforce that is at a lower level of pay. They haven't yet earned those benefits, but we do have to pay that unfunded liability for a number of years. This was smoothed, but because we don't know exactly what those PERS payments are going to be in year 10 or 12, et cetera. We just know that we have them.
Jennifer,
so just going back, just going back to capital outlay.
Yeah.
We passed the Fix Our Parks bond measure for $68 million, but we know we've got another $300 million of major maintenance needs in parks.
Mm-hmm.
We passed regulations saying that we've got to fix and reinforce masonry buildings, and mm-hmm. the city has a lot of those, and that's likely to be a general fund obligation. So mm-hmm. is that included in that blue line?
No. And that's part of what I want to talk about today.
Right. We should probably just let you do your presentation and ask
One more question,
yes.
And you don't need it today. Can I please get the analysis that you did around pension obligation in terms
yes.
of unfunded liability now versus what your projections of unfunded liability are going
yes.
forward? Thank you.
This
yes.
is, of course, a sign of respect that we're jumping in all the time, but it does remind me, during one of my recovery days recently, I turned on to C-SPAN on cable TV, and they were playing the audio version of Supreme Court arguments on some mm-hmm. key cases.
Yes.
And it was really hilarious. You know, the some fancy lawyer would get up and say, you know, may it please the court. And would literally, before they had a chance to say anything, they had nine people jumping down their back mm-hmm. with questions. And then the chief judge at the end saying, well, thank you very much. Your time is up. And the lawyer had come prepared to say something, but was, I think it is a sign of respect, however, because we do live these issues.
Yes.
And you're presenting it to us in a format that's a little different than we're used to seeing.
Yes.
Commissioner Fish, C-SPAN, can we please chip in and get Nick a subscription
Netflix.
To Netflix, please? Yes. Can we do something to help our friend Nick Fish here?
I actually love the fact that you are so engaged in this. And let me share some things that I found intriguing about this chart when I was putting it together. The first is the magnitude of certain spending areas, such as payroll and PERS. I think for me, I think in pictures, and it was helpful to see this something like this visually displayed rather than always in our budget documents. A second observation is that small changes we make today can impact the upward slope or the growth rate of these obligations. So, for example, payroll. Changes that we make in year one have long-term impacts. They also impact PERS because we use our final average salary to calculate the PERS numbers. Another observation is that while we have a lot of things that are committed and that are in our five-year forecast, there are many more shadow obligations and liabilities that are not yet included in here. So to your point, Commissioner, URM, and there was something else that you asked about, parks maintenance. If they're in the forecast, then they're in our forecast. But there's lots of other things that are farther out or are in that five-year time frame that we've not put dollars to that are not reflected.
So how do you account for how do you account in terms of your assumptions, future general fund here, for that portion of urban renewal that's going to come back into the general fund that the mayor has loosely called Bill Portland, but the council will annually decide how to allocate it? How is that accounted for?
That is not directly accounted for in here, and we've yet to issue those Bill Portland bonds, so they're not yet reflected.
But are you making assumptions? So Bill Portland assumes we bond against future
right.
revenues that come back to the general fund.
Right.
Let's assume we choose not to add to it. We don't go forward with Bill Portland. Does your model assume that a certain amount of new general fund resources comes online as urban renewal expires?
Yes.
So that's built into
that would assumption. That would have to be added to this. That's not yet reflected in this.
So that's a lot of money.
Yes.
But it's not reflected in your 15-year forecast.
It was not because at some point I wanted to just make a visual statement about where our obligations are and the fact that we have long-term exposures that we're not yet accounting for. Okay. Picture's worth a thousand words. Okay. So long-term financial planning. At its simplest, a financial plan is a roadmap for an organization to achieve its objectives, to ensure that the financial resources are being allocated in alignment with a strategic plan and strategic goals to achieve the outcomes that we want. So it's a roadmap. If we're not providing the financial resources in the right places, how are we going to achieve the outcomes that we want? A financial plan is also a tool for capturing all of the financial obligations we can foresee so that we can plan and fund appropriately. As financial stewards of the City of Portland, and I think of ourselves as a perpetual municipal corporation, the public is entrusting us to take this long view of our obligations. A financial plan will help us combat the tyranny of the immediate or the tyranny of the now and focus on the city's long-term financial sustainability. Today, the city requires all bureaus to engage in a one-year budget approval process. Certain bureaus are required to submit five-year financial plans, and bureaus with capital projects submit five-year capital improvement plans, which the City Budget Office consolidates into a citywide capital improvement plan for the city. We do not now have a citywide process to consolidate five-year financial plans from all bureaus into a citywide financial plan, nor do we look beyond that five-year time frame, even though we have known financial obligations and liabilities beyond 5 years. We're here to discuss establishing a process to create a citywide five-year financial plan and to identify, report on, prioritize, and fund these long-term financial obligations and liabilities. So there's some considerations that go into this. Long-term planning is tough. It requires making trade-offs and setting priorities. There are never going to be enough resources to do what we want, so we have to make those trade-offs. We continually add new programs, but I think it's fair to say that we rarely discontinue older programs. The goal is to stay aligned with our resources, because what we choose to do, we want to do well, and we want to make sure that we're funding things appropriately. Intergenerational equity. This concept directs us to pay today for the services and the resources that we're using, such as investing in infrastructure, so we maintain service levels rather than kick maintenance costs to future generations and let the condition of our infrastructure decline and force future generations to pay for it. We have the risk that certain liabilities are not owned by any one bureau, or they're owned by multiple bureaus, and that those can get lost in the planning process. And the risks of that, that liabilities or long-term issues that are not owned by any one bureau can get lost in the planning process. So PERS, for example. We all pay into PERS, but nobody brings in the old process with our budget, a bureau doesn't bring an ad package for PERS liability. Or Superfund, Portland Harbor is an issue that is likely going to be dealt with by multiple bureaus in the city. There's a risk that some of those issues get lost in the planning process because they're not owned by one particular owner. The risks that we run by not planning for these are that we lose flexibility. If we don't know what all of our obligations are, we don't know what we should be planning for. We lose time for researching our options, and we get caught by surprise. We really don't want to be confronted with a decision that we could have been planning for all along. The risks of not funding these are that costs will be higher in the future, and that we are forced into a reactive mode rather than a thoughtful decision-making mode to be planning for these issues. Regarding funding, once we identify future obligations and liabilities, they need to be funded. So what are our options? Reserve funds. Regular reserving would mean setting up accounts to hold monies for these future obligations. The benefits of using identified reserve funds are that we segregate funds and their purposes are easily identifiable. We can set up internal reserve funds. We can use third-party escrow funds. The risks of these reserve funds are that they don't get funded, that we have a policy that says we're supposed to be putting money into these funds, but we skip payments and don't use them.
Why don't we have a policy that prioritizes them? I mean, we have other financial policies around capital investments. Why not simply fund it first?
We can do that if we write it into the policy and make that part of our budget process. So I'll come back to FIN 203, which is financial planning, and FIN 204, which is budgeting. And we can declare that those are the first priorities, the first things that get funded. But it's part of the budget process.
So let's put this in context. You know, it was a pretty big deal when many, many years ago, and I think it was Commissioner Saltzman, Commissioner Fritz will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was Commissioner Saltzman who ultimately carried the day on this issue, where council said, for example, that if Parks opens a new asset like a park, automatically we had to build in the O&M. into the CAL, the forecast, to cover the operating costs. Now, that has had two interesting unintended consequences. When Commissioner Novick served on the council, from time to time, he was loath to support investments in parks because he was concerned about the companion obligation that came with O&M, which he didn't think should just be automatically. He agreed with the principle that you book the operating expenses when you open a new asset. But he was concerned that he lost any leverage over that decision if he just said, yes, we should have, you know, I'm approving a five-year CIP that includes wonderful new parks and, by implication, a pressure on the general fund because of additional O&M. So that was one unintended consequence. Another interesting unintended consequence was the ongoing debate between the commissioner in charge of the Bureau and the Independent Budget Office about what is the right number. There's been...
Number four.
For O&M. Mm-hmm. There's been a spirited discussion as some assets have come online about what should be the right number. And I'm not accusing parks of inflation, but I'm just saying that if parks comes up with a number, the Independent Budget Office has often scrubbed that number, and we've had to sort of go back and forth. So that's another interesting dynamic. But the point I wanted to make is, aside from that context, so we now say we open a park, we have to build in the O&M. What we don't say is, as Commissioner Fritz used to celebrate all the wins in terms of investments under the parks bond measure that she passed, like putting a new roof on a community center, we didn't say, concurrent with that conversation, that we're going to set aside the replacement fund. We just set ourselves up for the next, you know, gap. But we didn't say, okay, that's a 20-year roof, and at that community center, we're going to set aside a sum of money over time so that when we replace it in 20 years, we don't need to do a bond measure. It's just a sinking fund. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're getting at?
Yes. Okay. And the analogy to this is a homeowners association model, which is a way to manage real estate where the full cost of sustaining that piece of real estate is looked at over an extended period of time. How much are the what appliances need to get replaced over 30 years? How much do they cost? When does the roof need to get replaced? How much does that cost? When does the carpet need to be replaced, et cetera? And all of those, the full costs of maintaining and sustaining that property over its life is forecast, and regular amounts are set aside every month into an account that will pay for those things over the life of the asset. So there isn't the debt issuance at the end or intermittently to pay for the roof or the appliances, whatever. But when the expense hits, the funds are available because it has been reserved for over the life. And it means taking that full cost approach to the asset. So a new park, what is the O&M to maintain this park over its life? And that is the cost of this asset. It's the cost of maintaining the service level, and the objective is to sustain this over the perpetual life of us, the city, because that is an investment that we have made in the city. Again, I'll point out that the risk to these funds is that they either don't get funded or that money is looked at later on and taken out and used for a different purpose. Another way to chip at these long-term obligations is to allocate one-time money when it's available. I've thought that we should put in a decision package. Again, I'm using the wrong words, but for the new budget approach.
Direction to develop.
Thank you. For all of the one-term money, and say that the one-term money should be used to start chipping away at some of our long-term obligations that are not yet on the planning horizon.
Well, obviously, that sounds like a good thing to do. However, our current policy is that half of it goes to some of the most urgent needs of major maintenance. So would you be thinking that this allocation would be from the other half?
It could be. And just as an observation, there are other cities that have a similar capital set aside. I was listening to a podcast from Bond Buyer, and they were interviewing the budget director for the city of New York, and their capital set-aside percentage is 75%.
So they have a lot of assets. They have a lot of older assets, and they put away a more sizable amount than we do to reinvest in those every year. But that could be a use of one-time money to start buying down these external or these shadow obligations, liabilities. And then lastly, and this came up from the budget work session last week or the week before, identify opportunities to share costs with regional partners, such as what we're doing with the levy, or that, Commissioner Fish, you had observed for a rent study with Home Forward. There are things that we can do collectively that will help reduce the costs that we should be actively taking advantage of. So none of these approaches are mutually exclusive.
What about the politically sensitive issue of oversubscribed funds that you administer as reserve funds?
Mm-hmm.
At what point do we look at those various funds and determine that we have more than enough reserves? Now, we know that we've had history with the Bureau of Development Services where we're sometimes oversubscribed, but we then hit a recession and we've gotten down to zero. So we know that there's a reason why we want to have as much padding as possible,
right,
to hedge against the downturn and what that. But we do have all these reserve accounts, and at some point you may choose to go look at them and determine that we're unduly conservative in some of our assumptions. Does that potentially mm-hmm. free up money, and is that money also available resources for what you're talking about?
I would see in the reserve funds that I've looked at, we fund them to a certain confidence level, and that would be an approach that helps you not overfund. But if there is a reserve fund that is overfunded and there's discussion here, it could potentially be funds that could be used elsewhere. But we'd want to get some history to that so that we're comfortable with the level that we are funding these reserve funds. Does that answer your question?
Commissioner, before you get too excited, I want you to know that I looked into what I could spend BDS reserve funds on, because we were doing just fine in that department, and it's very limited. Not that you – we're going to raid our coffers, but
– Well, I'm in the 10 years that I've been on the council, I remember once – I remember a feast or famine thing we went through where we had a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it seemed like we were flush, and then we hit the worst recession in our lifetime. And there were painful cuts to the Bureau, and revenue wasn't coming in, and the commissioner then chose to offset some of the pain by drawing down on that reserve. And it ended up, I think, getting down to close to zero, which was not a healthy thing.
Yeah, I think we've all learned from that lesson. I don't expect us to be back in a similar position this time around.
Yeah. That would need to be a very thoughtful discussion, I would recommend.
Well, we have a financial policy now for BDS that with those various triggers comparing this year's quarter to last year's quarter, then there's mandatory cuts within the Bureau. Part of the challenge previously was that the commissioner in charge thought he could get through by using reserves. And so the policy that we passed, which I believe is binding city policy, will prevent that from happening again.
So, looking at certain future spending obligation categories, I've put them into three broad categories. There's personnel, there's legacy, and infrastructure. So, in personnel, labor contracts periodically come up for discussion. We have the non-rep class comp that we just completed and goes into effect in early December, and we've talked about having payroll exposure to that. And then there's the current pay equity discussion. All of these, and I go back to the original slide, all of these decisions that we make in the near term can have longer-term impacts to what our spending curve looks like in the future. So we want to be mindful of that. Now, I don't particularly like the word legacy, but I've continued to use it. I'm open to suggestions about what terminology we should be using for these. But we know that we will have some obligation for the harbor restoration. We know that we will have some obligation for the levy. And we briefly discussed PERS previously. I think PERS should actually be in both personnel and legacy, because we will continue to have PERS payments even once we get through this current UAL, unfunded actuarial liability issue. Yes.
So this is the second time you've raised the Portland Harbor. You included it earlier in the risk of something being either shared by multiple bureaus or slipping through the cracks or something. Mayor, may I make a suggestion? Given the limited time that the bureaus have to make budget presentations, you know, and just historically there's never enough time just to do the base budget presentation, I would urge you to consider this year asking Portland Harbor to present as if it were a bureau. It is actually, to Jennifer's point, there's an enormous amount of money at stake. There are multiple bureaus involved. And it seems to me, because it's a legacy obligation, the council ought to be advised as to what the potential obligation is and how we got there. And so whether that's an equal slot during our budget presentation or a work session, I think, I'm putting additional work on my team's shoulders, but I hadn't thought about it the way that Jennifer has just presented it. And I do think the council needs to have a holistic view about what our cost structure is and what it might be over time and which bureaus may be on the hook. So I would urge us to do that as a freestanding presentation.
I'd be very interested in that. Can we make that happen? Can we rotate that into the schedule? That's a good suggestion. Thanks, Commissioner.
And then we continue to have infrastructure issues. We recently committed to ADA upgrades. We have major maintenance. In addition to parks, we have major maintenance issues in PBOT and facilities. And to your point, Commissioner, that you raised, we have URM upgrades that are on city properties because the policy that we are putting forth will impact us as well as other property owners. So what I've done next is start building out what, with these categories, certain items that are in them. And this is how I would envision a plan that would need to come to you for discussion. That we talk about the dollars, we talk about the time frame, we talk about the confidence level. We don't know the dollars for many of these, but just because we don't know the dollars and they're not yet in our five-year forecast doesn't mean that we shouldn't be talking about them. We should be talking about them because they are rolling down the curve, if you will, and they will hit us in year five. But we have all this time right now to start doing something for it, even though the dollars may not be exact and even though the confidence level may not be high. I'd be happy to answer any questions about any line items. I tried to put in all of the things that have been previously discussed in the other two budget sessions or work sessions.
I think the ongoing Parks Major Maintenance Fund is bigger than $500,000.
That was per year. That's a...
The ongoing Parks and Recreation Major Maintenance Fund, I thought it was $500,000 when I started and we got it up higher than that.
And I thought it was a new $500,000 added per year to what was existing the prior year. So it's additive to each year. That was my understanding.
Yeah, Josh Howard, City Economist. It is designed to be
additive. The budget note directs the bureaus to come every fall bump and ask for you to add to their Cal target, their ongoing Cal target. So
right, but
we've
already got an ongoing major maintenance fund, so I think
it's already
wildly inadequate, but I think it's something like $1.7 million a year.
Okay.
That's about right.
So my mistake then for including it in this list.
Well, it's just the numbers, but it's marginally higher, but doesn't help all that much.
Josh, stick around for a sec.
Yeah.
My recollection was a number of years ago, we set up an ongoing line of ongoing funding for Portland Harbor.
That's correct. About it's $1 million a year.
$1 million a year. And why isn't that reflected in this document?
That was originally designed for, I forget what the acronym stands for, NERDA credits.
Yeah.
That we have now fully funded and are looking at the next stage of. That is Slightly, it's related, but it's separate from the overall general fund obligation that will come out of the agreement. And so I think Jennifer's just making a distinction about that component. So we do have some money, but we don't know what the ultimate amount is. We know it's likely quite a bit higher than the $1 million we have sitting there.
But assuming it takes the usual glacial time to resolve that question, the $1 million gives us, as a city, a lot of flexibility. It allows us to do some early action. It potentially allows us to bond against it, and it covers some other expenses. So it may not fit within this chart, but the $1 million of ongoing mm-hmm. has been helpful to our cause.
Oh, absolutely. We did spend it on credits towards this end, and it's still there. So it's in any given year. We can make a decision to carry it over and add to it and make it additive so that we buy down the cost in the future. We can bond against it, as you said, once we find out what the actual liability is. So that absolutely gives us some flexibility.
I have a question about sources on this document. This document would be more useful to me if I also had some sense of the potential sources. Mm-hmm. So a lot of this is TBD or ongoing or low confidence. And having flipped the page prematurely, I know you're going to pitch us on the idea of financial planning and financial concepts, which I think is fabulous, and I'm supportive. But obviously, we're going to need some semblance of estimates, and we have either low confidence or no estimate. And even for some of these where I think the future liability is reasonably easier to ascertain, like the PERS liability, that's various and ongoing on this. I mean, how are we going to do financial planning if we don't have a sense of what the actual obligation is?
And go ahead.
I was just going to answer a very specific question around PERS. We do have a policy that every time the PERS rate, employer rates change, we do add to Bureau Cal targets. So it does crowd out other potential expenses, but we do sort of build that in as part of the financial planning model for the forecast.
Right. So that is, in effect, going back to what I said earlier, that's actually taking the money up front for a known liability. And I presume that is where you're headed, is trying to find a plan where we have discipline in terms of funding known liabilities, either short-term or long-tail liabilities.
Yes.
But do we have a forecasting problem, or is it just we live in an uncertain world? Why are we not able to even attach orders of magnitude to some of these liabilities?
In some cases, we don't want to get out ahead of a legal process. So there are instances
stipulated.
Where...
Okay,
where,
so I get that, and that's one out of
yeah.
right.
15. Two. Okay,
yeah.
I'll accept two.
And so the others are we make adjustments to the 4 or 5 year forecast based on directions from council generally. And so not even generally, specifically. And so if council wanted to take an action saying that we know that X liability is out there, we want to set aside X $1 million on ongoing and directs the city budget office to do that, we will do that.
So let me just throw this out there, and this is about as effective as throwing a dart, but we know it's not zero
right? Yes.
for any one of these.
You know, it's
something
a positive
larger
integer.
Than zero. And in some cases, we can probably estimate an order of magnitude. For example, the parks – O&M for new parks, at least those parks that are in the planning process, we can probably come within spitting distance of what the O&M would be for those particular parks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I feel like there is some process we could go to, pick a number, knowing it's an imperfect number, but at least begin the disciplinary process mm-hmm. of reserving against those known liabilities, as opposed to just saying we don't know the answer, therefore we're not going to reserve anything, which seems to be the current policy.
Right. No, I think you're right. And Jennifer, I should say, has been very good at working with us and trying to figure out, and we've had some discussions around mm-hmm. different options, so I don't want to hijack your...
No, go ahead. Okay, that's fine.
But we have had a discussion about having a policy reserve, just a general policy reserve, because we know we've got certain...
Right.
liabilities out there. And it doesn't have to be real specific. It can be pretty vague. But we have to have the discipline enough to set it aside.
And we have to socialize. What we're doing here is socializing the idea to having a reserve fund for these long-term liabilities and obligations that we do not have down to the penny.
No, and I understand that. I mean, we're sitting here having this conversation because somebody 30 years ago didn't.
Yes.
And so the question now is, can we start to get our hands around this so that our successors 30 years from now aren't sitting around having the same conversation? They will, of course, but at least let's begin the process.
Ted, Bud Clark's on the phone. He took some great offense at a recent
35 years ago, 40 years ago.
And he's withdrawing his endorsement.
Back in the old days.
Jennifer, on your building a financial plan, the goal here, though, is to focus on general fund.
Yeah.
And yet, your Southwest Corridor Light Rail local match, which we were told the other day may very well come almost exclusively out of urban renewal, mm-hmm. would not be general fund. So
correct.
So does that need an asterisk?
Yes, I can add an asterisk.
Because I would like to keep color of money clear here.
And that, yes.
And if it is exclusively a general fund obligation, mm-hmm. which we know, for example, Portland Harbor is going to be exclusively general fund. I mean, we got that. But if we can mm-hmm. shift the load to some other source, mm-hmm. I do think we should be clear that it might be a hybrid or there might be some non-general
yes.
fund source.
I was going off a CBO analysis that showed that the city had already contributed $850,000 of general fund resources for this effort, for the Southwest Corridor effort.
The city had already what?
Contributed $850,000 of general fund resources to pay for city bureau staff involvement and payment to Metro for some of their work performed on the project. So yes, we part of this is clarifying out all of the source, what all of the potential sources are, and where the funding might come from. This was preliminary, just to spark discussion, which I'm glad it is. So, So we currently have. A financial policy, FIN 203, a comprehensive financial management policy that talks about financial planning. And you directed me earlier this year to add to that or to flesh out a policy for the city that directs us to start funding replacement reserves. And FIN 203 was shared citywide for a three-week comment period. We got back comments on reserve funding for replacement reserves. What I'm recommending is that we add some new concepts to that that talk about the longer-term planning and specifically have bureaus identify those longer-term financial issues, that the CFO be responsible for submitting issues that, as we discussed earlier, are not owned by one individual bureau or coordinating issues that are owned by multiple bureaus, and that we hopefully can use the new budget software to standardize the data and formatting for these longer-term issues that are not in the five-year forecast and issue a report to you about longer-term financial issues that we can address in the budget process. We have a very good foundation in FIN 203. I think it's the right place for us to be discussing these issues and giving guidance to bureaus so that we have something to discuss with you. I'm available for any other questions that you might have.
Can you tell us then what you would recommend as the next steps? How do we...
The next steps are that
assuming
I will...
Assuming we if agree with what we're hearing.
If you agree with this, then I will go back to FIN 203 and add more verbiage along these lines. We already went out citywide. I'm debating whether we go out citywide again.
To make that decision.
Right? Yeah. I'll coordinate with the CBO about the actual process, but I didn't want you surprised when I don't want you surprised when it comes back to you for approval that it addresses replacement reserves on the small end, but also has an effort to looking beyond our five-year forecast.
So to clarify, could you clarify what you would be bringing back to council specifically?
I would be bringing back to you a new version of FIN 203 that addresses replacement reserves, back to the issue from earlier in the year, and addresses a long-term beyond the five-year forecast financial obligation process for bureaus to follow.
So you would bring back the policy, not what you're proposing here around the new concepts. You won't actually provide us the work.
I would provide you the policy that is the directive to the bureaus to submit this information as part of the budget process.
Okay, for this year.
I don't see how, Mr. Mayor. And plus, it occurs to me that you have an additional tool that you can use to sharpen this. I mean, I think at a high level, we could start talking about the policy. It's a little late in the game to start saying that this is going to be a major part of our budget, in my opinion. But we also have a community survey that's going to go out toward the end of the budget cycle, maybe at the end of the budget cycle. I would love to use the community survey to pose a couple of questions to people about how they respond to this concept, get some feedback. Should we take discretionary one-time resources and put them into a replacement reserve? You know, should this be part? But I think how likely is it that we can go to policy and then implementation, where here it is November and we're all working on our budgets under the existing guidance? I think my own view is it's a mountain too tall to try to get this in place for this budget cycle, but maybe I'm cautious.
We can make it a smaller mountain and have it be a memo to you from me that outlines what some of these or what we expect to be in these longer term obligations that are not caught in the budget process, so it can be less formal, makes it a smaller mountain.
I would like to see, you know, notwithstanding what Commissioner Fish said, and I agree we are pretty far along in the process already, but I think there are steps we can take in this process that would be reflective of the kind of financial planning you're suggesting. Frankly, I think this is the kind of planning bureau directors and bureau leadership should be providing anyway. We should be talking about how to maintain what we've got and how to replace what we've got when we need to replace it. So I would support at least the memo concept, if not bringing back a policy for consideration, but being mindful that a lot of bureau directors are pretty far along in their process. Would that be acceptable?
And Mayor, again, we're putting lots of burdens on bureaus right now with a whole new system, and we're now talking about adding something, which is another wild card. Concurrent with developing some policy stuff and having Jennifer come back and talk about policy and having that discussion will take some time. I also think we need to engage the public on this. I'm very interested in knowing how the public reacts to this and get some feedback. In addition to that, I think a laudable goal in year one would be sunshine. So tightening up requirements about disclosing unfunded liabilities, tightening up disclosure about, so you had this discussion earlier about could we sharpen our pencil on what Parks O&M is for 5 years or 10 years? Well, we can look at our capital spending plan. We can take a look at where we've allocated systems development charges. We can make some educated guesses about parks that are going to come online on any time frame that you ask. We can make some educated guesses about what the O&M is, and we can help put a range here if the idea of having more information. Mm-hmm. Because the more you fill out the financial plan, it's going to have both a chilling and probably therapeutic effect on how we look at one-time resources in the budget. Mm-hmm. And right now, we don't have data which checks our normal impulse, which is to invest it in lots of worthy programs, but not grappling with this question of unfunded liabilities.
And to your point about the parks, without even making an assumption about new parks coming online, you can look at what we already have today and ask whether we are sufficiently funding that O&M or not. And I would suggest that we're probably not, and so that we don't even need, we're going to have an issue to talk about even without assuming new parks coming online, because we have not sufficiently funded the O&M for what we have.
Right. Again, I'm just, in terms of what the mayor said earlier, I'm drawing a distinction in this budget process between working out some policy questions and bringing sunshine on this question versus reorienting a budget process to put the burden on bureaus to figure out how to cover these costs.
Right.
I think that's the that's in my opinion that's the bridge too far.
And I would agree that sunshine and just talking about these issues as part of the process would be helpful and is a laudable goal, because we haven't. They keep getting kicked. The can keeps getting kicked, and the time that we do start to talk about them is when they hit year five. But we've known about them. We've known about them in years 6 through 20, and we can see them coming. We just need a process to start talking about them earlier.
Oh, Commissioner Bailey.
Sorry, I feel like I'm watching a ping pong match right now. So first of all, thank you for this. When I found out that we didn't have these kinds of reserves set up, I was surprised and alarmed. Makes me feel somewhat better about my own lack of personal financial planning, but I don't think that we should run the city the way that I've been running my life, frankly. You said we're never going to have enough to do everything that we want to do or need to do. That may be true, but I don't want to accept that. And so knowing the obligations and then looking at what it would take for us to do everything, I think would be everything we want to do would be a helpful exercise, because we obviously need to moderate our ambitions. We need to seek out new revenue streams, and we also need to start being more responsible about setting aside money for future obligations. I'm just concerned. I mean, that's going to be a complicated conversation, and how we strike the balance between mm-hmm. current urgent needs and longer term right. obligations is going to be
right
interesting.
Which is why I put intergenerational equity in there. We're here, but for a moment in time. And yet there are assets we are managing and obligations we are paying for that people prior to all of us decided on, and likewise people in the future will have to deal with. So, yes. And that's where, in my mind, thinking of that first graph with committed at the bottom and then working our way up to the more discretionary is important too, because when we continue to go back to parks, when we put a new park online, we're making a commitment. Unless we expect that park to deteriorate over time and just disappear back into the wilds, we're making a commitment to sustain that park as part of the city going forward.
I also want to suggest, and I know that some other bureaus do this, but you know, with PBOT, we rate our roads, and the goal is to keep roads within a certain level of repair or disrepair, because they get exponentially more expensive to repair once we... if we defer maintenance too long, and I think that we should be doing that to all of our assets. And I'm also wondering, you know, I don't have the kind of expertise that you have or the mayor has or either of my colleagues, but we have such a tiny debt service. Are there areas where it's worth it now to go into debt to get it done, to save money in the future, which sounds like mm-hmm. the opposite of what mm-hmm. we're trying to do often, which is pay down the debt service more quickly to save on interest. But mm-hmm. I'm concerned that we're not going to have any money left for other really important efforts if we try to set aside everything we need.
Mm-hmm.
In this
there's
picture.
Tough decision making, and BES and water go through that analysis a lot about when is the right time, and PBOT too, when is the right time to fix something or to build something or to rehab something, and you do that analysis between the money now versus how much more it's going to cost if you wait 10 years to address it. That's part of the calculus that goes into that decision making.
So I was going to ask the same question, Commissioner, about debt service. Could you both talk about would it be worth borrowing and adding that ongoing cost?
I think... Go ahead.
No.
I think that's a discussion to have at the time that we are looking at what the issue is that we're talking about. I don't want to make a blanket statement.
Okay.
It is a tool. It is a tool.
So it should be in the toolbox.
It's in the, and it is in the toolbox, and right. we do use it as part of our arsenal of tools. We're very judicious in how we use that tool, and that we've done a very good job with that. We don't want to do anything to change that, but we should be looking at that as part of the analysis for each of the items that we're looking at funding.
I think that's right. I think there's, and it was, frankly, that was part of the discussion around the Build Portland idea, was that we don't have a lot of general fund debt. But we have to realize the other side of the coin, too. We don't want to take out debt for projects that we can't deliver on in a timely manner. And I think even with the modest amount of the additional capital set aside that we've had, the parks bond that's come on, the initial Build Portland things, we're running into capacity issues. So I'm pushing money out the door. And so we need to be considerate of that other side of it as well. I think we'd agree there is potential room to issue new debt service to fund these things. But the question is whether or not we can push the projects out the door fast enough that we're not just paying interest costs on dollars we're not using.
Thank you. That's helpful. I want to note that this is not the first time we've had this discussion. It seems we didn't do it last year, but it seems like every other year we look at all of the obligations we're going to have, and then we kind of throw up our hands and say, well, we'll try. And we have made some incremental progress. I seem to remember that the park's major maintenance was $500,000 a year when I took over, and it's up to about $1.7 million. Now, the mayor last... this budget session, putting the budget notes for the $1 million for ADA into both PBOT and parks is the first really significant, these are the first dollars, put them in first and calculate mm-hmm. off that. And so that is going to move the dial a lot. And it's going to take discipline. I mean, we need to have the policy discussion. If we're talking about one-time money, we've got the ongoing city policy that half of it goes to those major maintenance projects, which, as we know from the bump discussion, we don't have nearly enough to do everything that's really urgent and that we really want to do. So I hope we continue doing that so that then we're talking about the other half of the one-time money and the ending fund balance. And so that means discipline on our parts to put it against these known liabilities that we're going to need to pay, and that will mean saying, unfortunately, we can't do a new program. And so I think we know what the public wants. They want us to be fiscally responsible and to maintain what we have, provide when we don't have. So it's a significant, I mean, the budget is where the decisions, you know, follow mm-hmm. the money. If the money's right. not there, it doesn't happen. Right. By and large, you can do some things with volunteers, but so I think we also need to be thinking about funding sources. Obviously, if the FCC goes down the path that they're going to and takes away our ability to get franchise fees, that is a significant dent. And in the case of another recession, our income from those sources won't be as much as it has been recently. So that needs to be part of the conversation too, that the pie just basically isn't big enough. And so what are the choices in terms of going hungry or finding another pie?
Mayor, could I jump in for a sec?
I was going to jump in. Commissioner Fritz mentioned ADA, and I would just like to put that issue out there as something that I think that we should consider going into debt to achieve. I mean, I wasn't interested in patting our council on the back for City Hall for reaching the settlement with Creek, because we've had an obligation to do this for over 25 years. And generations of people with mobility challenges or other disabilities are not being well served by the city. So that's an example of something that I would like to see us make a much higher priority. I mean, we're supposed to be an age-friendly city. We have, compliance issues with federal laws. I know there's a host of other urgent obligations, but that's one that I would